Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1087, Fascism 2019 World Tour, Part 2. This is being recorded on September 10th of the year 2019. We're going to pick up right where we left off in our last program. We have been reading from a very important and yet characteristically slanted article from the New York Times of August 10th of 2019, exactly a month ago. It is about the rise of the Sweden Democrats, a Swedish fascist party with strong roots not only in the quote neo-unquote Nazi milieu. I don't like the term neo. Now, they're simply Nazis. And in the case of the Sweden Democrats, its founding has its genesis is not only with the Nazi milieu, but one of the founders have a background in the Waffen-SS. In our last program, we talked about the fact that one of the major financiers of the Sweden Democrats was none other than Carl Lundstrom, who also financed the Pirate Bay website that hosted WikiLeaks. The overlap between the milieu of the Sweden Democrats, global fascism, and WikiLeaks is considerable. It was a Russian-born fascist named Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jeremas, who arranged for WikiLeaks to hold forth on the Pirate Bay website. Again, financed by Carl Lundstrom in large measure, who also financed much of the activity for the Sweden Democrats. The work for Russia and Belarusia, now Belarus, for WikiLeaks is done by that very same Joran Jeremas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, which casts into perspective the predictable allegation by the New York Times that Russia is behind the rise of the Sweden Democrats. Note also that Jeremas' son, Johannes Wallström, a bird of the same political feather, is in charge of WikiLeaks activities for Scandinavia. That obviously includes Sweden. Note that in cyber affairs, a skilled internet activist slash hacker can do a lot to mask his, her, or their activities as someone else. A cyber false flag operation for a skilled internet operator is relatively easy to do. Note in this regard also that, as we have looked at, and I will link in the written description for this show to the program in which we discussed that, the CIA's cyber weapons are specifically designed to mimic the activities of other countries, including and especially Russia and China. That is worth noting. Also, in that regard, as we looked at in For the Record 1079, and there will be some review and links again in the written description for this program, WikiLeaks itself, through Jacob Applebaum, and the Tor network on which WikiLeaks held forth on the Pirate Bay website has links to CIA and U.S. intelligence through the Broadcasting Board of Governors and that milieu. Again, we discussed that at some length. During the course of this world tour, which will go at least one more show, probably at least two, after this program, note several things. Note how the various fascist groups, and there are many iterations of same, have links, in particular operational links, with elements of U.S. and or Western intelligence. They are not coterminous, but they do work together, and that goes back to the World War II period and to the incorporation of the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit and other elements about which I have spoken at great length for decades. Note also, of paramount importance in this show in particular, the role of the Internet in the rise of fascist movements. That is important, and that role of the Internet and U.S. intelligence is, those two things are to be seen in tandem in connection with what we are talking about. Also, the Sweden Democrats, a misnomer if ever there was one, have made great political hay with anti-immigrant sentiment throughout Europe. Their generous social safety net has been taxed and, in the eyes of many, threatened by the immigration primarily from the Middle East. In the U.S., Donald Trump has made a great deal of political hay using anti-immigrant sentiment, and in turn, as we have looked at in, for the record, 1082 and 1083, I believe there is actually a PSYOP, an illegal immigrant or immigrant PSYOP underway in this country. The caravan that occurred just before the 2018 elections, the alleged murder of Molly Tibbetts by Christian Rivera, who blacked out while allegedly killing her, and the utilization by Donald Trump and company of those incidents as propaganda cudgels in the run-up to the 2018 elections is to be taken into account. And I believe that the so-called squad, AOC in particular, are basically creatures who have been elevated by the far right, not necessarily in and of themselves sinister, but in and of themselves gullible, narcissistic, self-absorbed, and self-righteous, as unfortunately tends to be the case by many people who have grown up with mobile technology, the Internet, and social media, which I think produces an inherently attenuated political consciousness. And I think those overlapping technologies do serious damage to people's personalities and to their intellects. More about that, perhaps, at a future time. But note, as we get into, again, the operations of the Sweden Democrats, the role of the Internet in generating the Sweden Democrats. Note the role of anti-immigrant sentiment in the rise, the ascent of the Sweden Democrats, who have gone from being a fringe Nazi party to being a force on the Swedish landscape with which many Swedish politicians now appear willing to network. And again, in the background of this, WikiLeaks and Göran Jermas / Johannes Wallström, and also the CIA. I'm going to leave out the allegation that this is coming from Russia. There is, in fact, a powerful Russian fascist milieu, and certainly many of them are active online. That is a subject that we have, the Russian fascist milieu. We have tackled in the past, not as much recently, but it is something to take into account as one sees the allegations of Russian interference in the U.S. elections, etc. But again, note the anti-immigrant theme that is common not only to Swedish, the Sweden Democrats, but to the ascent of fascism in many countries. Note the role of the Internet as well. From the New York Times of August 10th of 2019 by Joe Becker, the global machine behind the rise of far-right nationalism, unquote. This is about the Sweden Democrats, and we're going to skip down, although overlapping somewhat, with what we read in our last program. Speaking of this global disinformation machine, the distorted view of Sweden pumped out by this disinformation machine has been used in turn by anti-immigrant parties in Britain, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere, parenthetically, the U.S., to stir xenophobia and gin up votes, according to the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, a London-based nonprofit that tracks the online spread of far-right extremism. "I'd put Sweden up there with the anti-Soros campaign," unquote, said Chloe Colliver, C-O-L-L-I-V-E-R, a researcher for the Institute, referring to anti-Semitic attacks on George Soros, the billionaire benefactor of liberal causes. Quote, it's become an enduring centerpiece of the far-right conversation, unquote. Mattias Karlsson, the Sweden Democrats' international secretary and chief ideologist, likes to tell the story of how he became a soldier in what he has described as, quote, the existential battle for our culture and our nation's survival, unquote. It was the mid-1990s, and Mr. Karlsson, now 41, was attending high school in the southern city of Växjö. I'm probably mispronouncing that, V-A-X-J-O. Sweden was accepting a record number of refugees from the Balkans War and other conflicts. In Växjö and elsewhere, young immigrant men began joining brawling kicker gangs, radicalizing Mr. Karlsson and drawing him toward the local skinhead scene. He took to wearing a leather jacket with a Swedish flag on the back and was soon introduced to Mats Nilsson, N-I-L-S-S-O-N, a Swedish National Socialist leader who gave him a copy of Mein Kampf. They began to debate. Mr. Nilsson argued that the goal should be ethnic purity, the preservation of Swedish DNA, unquote. Mr. Karlsson, on the other hand, countered that the focus should be on preserving national culture and identity. That, he said, was when Mr. Nilsson conferred on him an epithet of insufficient commitment to the cause, meatball patriot, unquote, meaning that I thought that every African or Arab can come to this country as long as they assimilate and eat meatballs, unquote. It is an account that offers the most benign explanation for an odious association. Whatever the case, in 1999, Mr. Karlsson joined the Sweden Democrats, a party undeniably rooted in Sweden's neo-Nazi movement. Indeed, scholars of the far right say that is what sets it apart from most anti-immigration parties in Europe and makes its rise from marginalized to mainstream so remarkable. The party was founded in 1988 by several Nazi ideologues, including a former member of the Waffen-SS. Early on, it sought international alliances with the likes of the White Aryan Resistance, a white supremacist group founded by a former Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. That parenthetically is Tom Metzger. Some Sweden Democrats wore Nazi uniforms to party functions. Its platform included the forced repatriation of all immigrants since 1970. That was not, however, a winning formula in a country where social democrats have dominated every election for more than a century. While attending university, Mr. Karlsson had met Jimmy Akesson, A-K-E-S-S-O-N, who took over the Sweden Democrats Youth Party in 2000 and became party leader in 2005. Mr. Akesson was outspoken in his belief that Muslim refugees posed, quote, the biggest foreign threat to Sweden since the Second World War, unquote. But to make that case effectively, he and Mr. Karlsson agreed they needed to fundamentally remake the party's image. We need to really address our past, unquote, Mr. Karlsson said. They purged neo-Nazis who had been exposed by the press. They announced a, quote, zero-tolerance, unquote, policy toward extreme xenophobia and racism, emphasized their youthful leadership, and urged members to dress presentably. And while immigration remained at the center of their platform, they moderated the way they talked about it. No longer was the issue framed in terms of keeping certain ethnic groups out or deporting those who were already in. Rather, it was about how unassimilated migrants were eviscerating not just the nation's cultural identity, but also the social welfare heart of the Swedish state. Under the grand egalitarian idea of the folkhemmet, or people's home, in which the country is a family and its citizens take care of one another. Swedes pay among the world's highest effective tax rates in return for benefits like child care, health care, free college education, and assistance when they grow old. This last sentence again, because it goes to the core of the marketability of the Sweden Democrats, and there is an element of truth to it. I do not know the actual stat sheet, so to speak, what the actual numbers are, but Sweden, like many other European countries, does have a very generous social welfare benefit program, and they do, like many other European countries, have a high rate of taxation. So certainly it is understandable that they will experience anxiety whether or not there is an actual real danger of Sweden being destabilized by these people is another consideration altogether. However, in terms of the marketability of this, and I think something very similar is happening in the U.S., where basically immigrants, unquote, illegal immigrants, are being scapegoated for America's problems. They're not responsible for America's problems, but they're not the solution to it either. And the brain-dead Democrats who have decided to decriminalize entry, who want to decriminalize illegal entry into the U.S., are simply getting ready to hand Donald Trump a second term.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at SpitfireList.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
One more time. Under the grand egalitarian idea of the Folkhemmet, F-O-L-K-H-E-M-M-E-T, or People's Home, in which the country is a family and its citizens take care of one another, Swedes pay among the world's highest effective tax rates in return for benefits like child care, health care, free college education, and assistance when they grow old. The safety net has come under strain for a host of economic and demographic reasons, many of which predate the latest refugee flood. But in the Sweden Democrats' telling, the blame lies squarely at the feet of the foreigners, many of whom lag far behind native Swedes in education and economic accomplishment. One party advertisement depicted a white woman trying to collect benefits while being pursued by niqab-wearing immigrants pushing strollers. To what extent the party's makeover is just window dressing is an open question. The doubts were highlighted in what became known as the Iron Pipe scandal in 2012. Leaked video showed two Sweden Democrat MPs and the party's candidate for Attorney General hurling racist slurs at a comedian of Kurdish descent, then threatening a drunken witness with iron pipes. High-ranking party officials have bounced between Sweden and Hungary, which is ruled by the authoritarian nationalist Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Mr. Carlson himself has come under fire for calling out an extremist site as neo-fascist while using an alias to recommend posts as worth reading, unquote, to party members. Quote, there's a public face and the face they wear behind closed doors, said Daniel Poole, PWOHL, who heads Expo, a Stockholm-based foundation that tracks far-right extremism. That, by the way, was founded by the late novelist Stieg Larsson, who also, that the Expo magazine, their magazine, exposed the pivotal role, the decisive role of Jeron Jeremias, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, in getting WikiLeaks to hold forth on the Pirate Bay website, both Sweden Democrats and Pirate Bay financed by Carl Lundstrom. Continuing. Still, even Sweden Democrats' detractors admit that that strategy has worked. In 2010, the Sweden Democrats captured 5.7% of the vote, enough for the party, and Mr. Carlson to enter Parliament for the first time. That share has steadily increased along with the growing population of refugees. Today, roughly 20% of Sweden's population is foreign born. At its peak in 2015, Sweden accepted 163,000 asylum seekers, mostly from Afghanistan, Somalia, and Syria. Though border controls and tighter rules have eased that flow, Ardalan Shekarabi, S-H-E-K-A-R-I-B-I, the country's public administration minister, acknowledged that his government has been slow to act. Mr. Shekarabi, an immigrant from Iran, said the sheer number of refugees have overwhelmed the government's efforts to integrate them. Quote, "I absolutely don't think that the majority of Swedes have racist or xenophobic views, but they had questions about this migration policy, and the other parties didn't have answers," unquote, he said, which is one of the reasons why Sweden Democrats have a case. And let me tell you, if you get a Democratic nominee in 2020, who is one of those people who favors decriminalizing entry into the U.S., that will make a wonderful campaign ad for Donald Trump and may very well have much to do with returning Donald Trump to office. Continuing and skipping down. For years, the Sweden Democrats had struggled to make their case to the public, where mainstream media outlets declined their ads. The party even had difficulty getting the Postal Service to deliver its mailers. So it built a network of closed Facebook pages whose reach would ultimately exceed that of any other party. Again, the role of the Internet, social media, and, although not mentioned here, mobile technology. Fundamental to transforming our civilization and our political culture in a very destructive way, I believe. One more time. The Sweden Democrats built a network of closed Facebook pages whose reach would ultimately exceed that of any other party. But to thrive in the viral sense, the network required fresh, alluring content. It drew on the clutch of relatively new websites whose popularity was exploding. Members of the Sweden Democrats helped to create two of them. I'm not going to try the Swedish names, the News in Society and the News Today. By the 2018 election year, they, along with a site called Free Times, were among Sweden's 10 most shared news sites. These sites each reached one-tenth of all Swedish internet users a week, and according to an Oxford University study, accounted for 85% of the election-related junk news, unquote, deemed deliberately distorted or misleading, shared online. There were other sites, too, all injecting anti-immigrant and Islamophobic messaging into the Swedish political bloodstream. "Immigration behind shortage of drinking water in northern Stockholm," unquote, where one read one recent headline. Quote, "Refugee miner raped host family's daughter, thought it was legal," unquote, read another. "Performed female genital mutilation on her children, given asylum in Sweden," unquote, read a third. Skipping down. Another way to look at the explosive growth of Sweden's alt-right outlets is to see who is linking to them. The more links, especially from well-trafficked outlets, the more likely Google is to rank the sites as authoritative. That, in turn, means that Swedes are more likely to see them when they search for, say, immigration and crime. The Times analyzed more than 12 million available links from over 18,000 domains to four prominent far-right sites. And again, the Nyheter Idag, the Smålandsnyheter, Fria Tider, and Nya Tider. And I'm butchering those pronunciations, I'm sure. The data was culled by Mr. Lindholm, for the data was culled by Mr. Lindholm from two search engine optimization tools and represents a snapshot of all known links through July 2nd. As expected, given the relative paucity of Swedish speakers worldwide, most of the links came from Swedish language sites. But the analysis turned up a surprising number of links from well-trafficked foreign language sites, which suggests that the Sweden site's rapid growth has been driven to a significant degree from abroad. It has the makings, the characteristics of an operation whose purpose or goal is to help these sites become relevant by getting them to be seen as widely as possible, Mr. Lindholm said. Overall, more than one in five links were from non-Swedish language sites. English language sites, along with Norwegian ones, linked the most. One more time. The last couple of sentences, because this is fundamental. It has the makings, the characteristics of an operation whose purpose or goal is to help these sites become relevant by getting them to be seen as widely as possible, Mr. Lindholm said. Overall, more than one in five links were from non-Swedish language sites. English language sites, along with Norwegian ones, linked the most, nearly a million times. But other European language far-right sites, Russian but also Czech, Danish, German, Finnish, and Polish, were also frequent linkers. The Times identified three, that's New York Times, identified 356 domains that linked to all four Swedish sites. Many are well known in American far-right circles. Among them is the Gatestone Institute, a think tank whose site regularly stokes fears about Muslims in the U.S. and Europe. Its chairman was until last year, John R. Bolton, now Mr. Trump's national security advisor, and its funders have included Rebecca Mercer, a prominent, wealthy Trump supporter, also, by the way, along with her father, Robert, one of the key people behind the Cambridge Analytica operation. By the way, today, September 10th, John R. Bolton is no longer Trump's national security advisor. We'll see who comes next. Continuing, other domains that linked to all four Swedish sites include Stormfront, one of the oldest and largest American white supremacist websites, Voice of Europe, a Kremlin-friendly right-wing site, a Russian-language blog called SwedenForRus.nu, and Freiheit.net, a site supporter of the AfD in Germany. Skipping down. Some prominent Swedish center-right politicians are now expressing a willingness to work with the Sweden Democrats, portending a new political alignment. In February, the Sweden Democrats, Mr. Carlson, strode into a Washington-area hotel where leaders of the American and European right were gathering for the annual Conservative Political Action Conference. As he settled in at the lobby bar, straightening his navy three-piece suit, he was clearly very much at home. At the conference, where political boot camp training mixed with speeches by luminaries like Mr. Trump and the British populist leader Nigel Farage, Mr. Carlson hoped to learn about the infrastructure of the American conservative movement, particularly its funding and use of the media, and think tanks to broaden its appeal. But in the measure of how nationalism and conservatism have merged in Mr. Trump's Washington, many of the Americans with whom he wanted to network were just as eager to network with him. Mr. Carlson had flown in from Colorado, where he had given a speech at the Steamboat Institute, a conservative think tank. That morning, Tobias Anderson, with two S's, the Sweden Democrats' youngest member of parliament and a contributor to Breitbart, had spoken to Americans for tax reform, a bastion of tax cut orthodoxy, by the way, founded by Grover Norquist. Now, they found themselves encircled by admirers like Matthew Hurt, H-U-R-T-T, the Director for External Relationships at Americans for Prosperity, part of the billionaire Koch brothers' political operation, and Matthew Tyrmand, T-Y-R-M-A-N-D, a board member of Project Veritas, a conservative group that uses undercover filming to sting its targets. Mr. Tyrmand, who is also an advisor to a senator from Poland's anti-immigration ruling Law and Justice Party, was particularly eager. "You are taking your country back," he exclaimed. Mr. Carlson smiled, and again noting the networking of the Sweden Democrats with roots in Sweden's Nazi milieu and one of its founders actually having a background in the Waffen-SS, to networking with the likes of Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform, and the Koch brothers' Americans for Prosperity. There not only are obvious functional political links being formed, but again, note the role of anti-immigrant sentiment and how that is being very successfully mined and flogged both by the Republican Party and Donald Trump and by the Sweden Democrats and many others as well. Note again the role of the Internet in helping to facilitate the growth of the Sweden Democrats, and again, never lose sight of the heavy overlap between WikiLeaks and the Sweden Democrats, that being Carl Lundstrom, and some of the Russian and Scandinavian fascists, the aforementioned Messrs. Jermas and Wallstrom, who helped to bring that about.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, another article highlighting the role of the Internet and Internet technology in the ascent and even the forging itself of the laws of fascism. Again, a very important article from the New York Times, which, again, is a badly tainted source. And when we get into when our Fascism 2019 World Tour goes to Asia, we're going to be taking a look at some of the things going on not only in India, but in Hong Kong and China as well. And we're going to be taking a look at the Falun Gong cult, which is a fascist mind control cult that at the same time is part of the Western and American destabilization effort that is quite obviously going on vis-a-vis China and Hong Kong at the moment in particular. More about that, however, in a future program. We're now going to swing down, or really swing across the Atlantic from Scandinavia to Latin America, and specifically we're going to take a look at what is going on now in Brazil and the rise of Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil. His ascent has been affected to a large extent not only by the Internet again, but by YouTube. From the New York Times of August 11th of 2019, How YouTube Radicalized Brazil by Max Fisher and Amanda Taub. The article reads in part, and by the way, I may very well be mispronouncing some of these Brazilian names. Brazil's native language is Portuguese, and my Portuguese pronunciation is poor. So again, I'm probably butchering some of these names, but the written description has these names in print so they can be verified. Again, the New York Times of August 11th of 2019, How YouTube Radicalized Brazil by Max Fisher and Amanda Taub. When Matias Dominguez was 16, YouTube recommended a video that changed his life. He was in a band in Niterói, N-I-T-E-R-O-I, a beach-ringed city in Brazil, and practiced guitar by watching tutorials online. YouTube had recently installed a powerful new artificial intelligence system that learned from user behavior and paired videos with recommendations for others. One day, it directed him to an amateur guitar teacher named Nando Moura, M-O-U-R-A, who had gained a wide following by posting videos about heavy metal, video games, and, most of all, politics. In colorful and paranoid far-right rants, Mr. Moura accused feminists, teachers, and mainstream politicians of waging vast conspiracies. Mr. Dominguez was hooked. As his time on the site grew, YouTube recommended videos from other far-right figures. One was a lawmaker named Jair, J-A-I-R, Bolsonaro, B-O-L-S-O-N-A-R-O, then a marginal figure in national politics, but a star in YouTube's far-right community in Brazil, where the platform has become more widely watched than all but one TV channel. Last year, he became President Bolsonaro. Quote, YouTube became the social media platform of the Brazilian right, said Mr. Dominguez, now a lanky 17-year-old who says he, too, plans to seek political office. Members of the nation's newly empowered far-right, from grassroots organizers to federal lawmakers, say their movement would not have risen so far or so fast without YouTube's recommendation engine. New research has found that they may be correct. YouTube's search and recommendation system appears to have systematically diverted users to far-right and conspiracy channels in Brazil. A New York Times investigation in Brazil found that time and again, videos promoted by the site have upended central elements of daily life. One more time, because this sentence is really important. A New York Times investigation in Brazil found that time and time again, videos promoted by the site, aka YouTube, have upended central elements of daily life. Teachers describe classrooms made unruly by students who quote from YouTube conspiracy videos or who, encouraged by right-wing YouTube stars, secretly record their instructors. And in politics, a wave of right-wing YouTube stars ran for office alongside Mr. Bolsonaro, some winning by historic margins. Most still use the platform governing the world's fourth largest democracy through internet-home trolling and provocation. By the way, when we swing over to Asia, we're going to be taking a look at India, the largest, quote, democracy, unquote, which is surging into fascism under Narendra Modi, who has fused his Hindutva fascism with Bozian revisionism. More about that, however, in an upcoming program. We might be able to get into parts of that near the end of this show. But again, in politics, a wave of right-wing YouTube stars ran for office alongside Mr. Bolsonaro, some winning by historic margins. Most still use the platform governing the world's fourth largest democracy through internet home trolling and provocation. The emotions that draw people in, like fear, doubt, and anger, are often central features of conspiracy theories and, in particular, experts say, of right-wing extremism. As the system suggests more provocative videos to keep users watching, it can direct them toward extreme content they might otherwise never find. And it is designed to lead users to new topics to pique new interest, a boon for channels like Mr. Mora's that use pop culture as a gateway to far-right ideas. The system now drives 70% of total time on the platform, the company says. As viewership skyrockets globally, YouTube is bringing in over $1 billion a month, some analysts believe. Zeynep Tufekci, Tufekci, a social media scholar, has called it, quote, one of the most, that it being YouTube, one of the most powerful, radicalizing instruments of the 21st century. One more time. Again, Zeynep, Zeymep, P as in Paul, T-U-F as in Frank, E-K, C as in Charlie, I, a social media scholar, has called YouTube, quote, one of the most powerful, radicalizing instruments of the 21st century, unquote. If you combine that with Twitter, Facebook, and some of these other social media, and online gaming, in our discussion of school shootings, the Steam online gaming, well, I know it's a platform, has 173 different venues promoting school shootings. Again, the internet and overlapping technologies have transformed not only our civilization, but our political culture, and not in a good way. And some of the discussion that I went into vis-a-vis Sikat Chakraborty and Justice Democrats and AOC et al., that is fundamental, the transformation of our political culture, and again, not only the sensationalizing of it, but the attenuation and the corresponding anti-intellectualism and the narcissism and self-absorption of things like Facebook, Twitter, and some of these technologies, I think, is consummately destructive, not only to the political culture itself, but I think it is working a terrible destructive influence on human beings themselves and their cognitive and societal manifestations, young people in particular. Continuing. YouTube company representatives disputed the study's methodology and said that the platform's systems do not privilege any one viewpoint or direct users toward extremism. However, company representatives conceded some of the findings and promised to make changes. Farshad Shadlu, a spokesman, said that YouTube has, quote, invested heavily in the policies, resources, and products to reduce the spread of harmful misinformation, adding, quote, we've seen that authoritative content is thriving in Brazil and in some of the most recommended content on the site. Dana Boyd, B-O-Y-D, a founder of the think tank Data and Society, attributed the disruption in Brazil to YouTube's unrelenting push for viewer engagement and the revenues it generates. Though corruption, scandals, and a deep recession had already devastated Brazil's political establishment and left many Brazilians ready for a break with the status quo, Ms. Boyd called YouTube's impact a worrying indication of the platform's growing impact on democracies worldwide. Quote, this is happening everywhere, she said. Mauricio Martins, M-A-R-T-I-N-S, the local vice president of Mr. Bolsonaro's party in Niterói, credited most, unquote, of the party's recruitment to YouTube, including his own. He was killing time on the site one day, he recalled, when the platform showed him a video by a right-wing blogger. He watched out of curiosity. It showed him another, and then another. Quote, "Before that, I didn't have an ideological political background," Mr. Martins said. YouTube's auto-playing recommendations, he declared, were, quote, "my political education," unquote. It was like that with everyone, he said. The platform's political influence is increasingly felt in Brazilian schools. Quote, "Sometimes I'm watching videos about a game, and all of a sudden it's a Bolsonaro video," said Inzaghi D., a 17-year-old high schooler in Niterói. Again, I mentioned about the online gaming as part of this devastating complex. Sometimes I'm watching videos about a game, and all of a sudden, it's a Bolsonaro video, said Inzaghi D., a 17-year-old high schooler in Niterói. More and more, his fellow students are making extremist claims, often citing as evidence YouTube stars like Mr. Moura, the guitarist turned conspiracist. "It's the main source that kids have to get information," he said. Few illustrate YouTube's influence better than Carlos Jorby, J-O-R-B-Y. Muscle-bound and heavily tattooed, his left hand bears a flaming skull with diamond eyes. He joined the city council in 2017 with few prospects of rising through traditional politics. So Mr. Jorby, again J-O-R-B-Y, took inspiration from bloggers like Mr. Moura and his political mentor, Mr. Bolsonaro, turning his focus to YouTube. He posted videos accusing local teachers of conspiring to indoctrinate students into communism. The videos won him a national audience, he said, and propelled his stunning rise only 2 years later to the federal legislature. One more time. He posted videos accusing local teachers of conspiring to indoctrinate students into communism. The videos won him a national audience, unquote, he said, and propelled his stunning rise only 2 years later to the federal legislature. "If social media didn't exist, I wouldn't be here," he said, "and Jair Bolsonaro wouldn't be president," unquote. A few hundred miles away from Niterói, a team of researchers led by Virgilio Almeida at the Federal University of Minas Gerais hunched over computers trying to understand how YouTube shapes its users' reality. The team analyzed transcripts from thousands of videos as well as the comments beneath them. Right-wing channels in Brazil, they found, had seen their audiences expand far faster than others did and seemed to be tilting the site's overall political content. In the months after YouTube changed its algorithm, positive mentions of Mr. Bolsonaro ballooned. So did mentions of conspiracy theories that he had floated. This began as polls still showed him to be deeply unpopular, suggesting that the platform was doing more than merely reflecting political trends. One more time. In the months after YouTube changed its algorithm, positive mentions of Mr. Bolsonaro ballooned, so did mentions of conspiracy theories that he had floated. This began as polls still showed him to be deeply unpopular, suggesting that the platform was doing more than merely reflecting political trends. A team at Harvard's Berkman Klein Center set out to test whether the Brazilian far-right's meteoric rise on the platform had been boosted by YouTube's recommendation engine. Journalist Kaiser and Yasadora Cordova, with Adrian Ruckfleisch of National Taiwan University, programmed a Brazil-based server to enter a popular channel or search term, then open YouTube's top recommendations, then follow the recommendations on each of those, and so on. By repeating this thousands of times, the researchers tracked how the platform moved users from one video to the next. They found that after users watched a video about politics or even entertainment, YouTube's recommendations often favored right-wing conspiracy-filled channels like Mr. Mora's. Crucially, users who watched one far-right channel would often be shown many more. The algorithm had united once marginal channels and then built an audience for them, the researchers concluded. One of those channels belonged to Mr. Bolsonaro, who had long used the platform to post hoaxes and conspiracies. Though a YouTube early adopter, his online following had done little to expand his political base, which barely existed on a national level. Then, Brazil's political system collapsed just as YouTube's popularity there soared. Mr. Bolsonaro's views had not changed, but YouTube's far right, where he was a major figure, saw its audience explode, helping to prime large numbers of Brazilians for his message at a time when the country was ripe for a political shift. YouTube challenged the researchers' methodology and said its internal data contradicted their findings. But the company declined the Times' request for that data, as well as requests for certain statistics that would reveal whether or not the researchers' findings were accurate. As the far right rose, many of its leading voices had learned to weaponize the conspiracy videos, offering their vast audiences a target, people to blame. Eventually, the YouTube conspiracists turned their spotlight on Deborah Diniz, D-I-N-I-Z, a women's rights activist whose abortion advocacy had long made her a target of the far right. Bernardo Kuster, K-U-S-T-E-R, a YouTube star whose homemade rants had won him 750,000 subscribers and an endorsement from Mr. Bolsonaro himself, accused her of involvement in the supposed Zika vaccination plot. The very people working to help families affected by Zika, their videos implied, were behind the disease. Backed by shadowy foreigners, their goal was to abolish Brazil's abortion ban or even make abortions mandatory. As far-right and conspiracy channels began citing one another, YouTube's recommendation system learned to string their videos together. However implausible any individual rumor might be on its own joined together, they created the impression that dozens of disparate sources were revealing the same terrifying truth. Quote, "It feels like the connection is made by the viewer, but the connection is made by the system," Ms. Demise said again. "It feels like the connection is made by the viewer, but the connection is made by the system." Threats of rape and torture filled Ms. Demise's phone and mail, some site of her daily routines. Many echoed claims from Mr. Kuster's videos, she said. Mr. Kuster gleefully mentioned though never explicitly endorsed the threats. That kept him just within YouTube's rules. When the university where Ms. Demise taught received a warning that a gunman would shoot her and her students, and the police said they could no longer guarantee her safety, she left Brazil. quote, the YouTube system of recommending the next video and the next video, she said, had created, quote, an ecosystem of hate, unquote. Quote, I heard here that she's an enemy of Brazil. I hear in the next one that feminists are changing family values. And the next one I hear that they receive money from abroad, she said. That loop is what leads someone to say, quote, I will do what has to be done, unquote. We need the companies to face their role, Ms. Denise said. Ethically, they are responsible. As conspiracy spread on YouTube, video makers targeted aid groups whose work touches on controversial issues like abortion. Even some families that had long relied on such groups came to wonder if the videos might be true and began to avoid them. In Brazil, this is a growing online practice known as linchamento, lynching. Mr. Bolsonaro was an early pioneer spreading videos in 2012 that falsely accused left-wing academics of plotting to force schools to distribute gay kits, unquote, to convert children to homosexuality. Mr. Jordi, his tattooed Niterói protégé, was untroubled to learn that his own YouTube campaign accusing teachers of spreading communism had turned their lives upside down. One of those teachers, Valeria Borges, said she and her colleagues had been overwhelmed with messages of hate, creating a climate of fear. Mr. Jordi, far from disputing this, said it had been his goal. Quote, I wanted her to feel fear, he said. It's a culture war we're fighting, he explained. This is what I came into office to do. Last section, Dictatorship of the Light. Ground Zero for Politics by YouTube may be the São Paulo headquarters of Movimento Brasil Livre, which formed to agitate for the 2016 impeachment of the left-wing president Dilma Rousseff. Its members trend young, middle-class, right-wing, and extremely online. Raymond Santos, the group's national coordinator, gestured to a door marked the YouTube division and said, this is the heart of things. Inside, eight young men poked at editing software. One was filing an image of Benito Mussolini for a video arguing that fascism had wrongly been blamed on the right. Mr. Santos, for example, called social media a weapon, adding that some people around Mr. Bolsonaro want to use this weapon to pressure institutions in the way that I don't see as responsible. The group's co-founder, a man-bun former rock guitarist named Pedro de Rote, said, quote, we have something here that we call the dictatorship of the like. Reality, he said, is shaped by whatever message goes most viral. Even as he spoke, a two-hour YouTube video was captivating the nation, titled 1964, for the year of Brazil's military coup. It argued that the takeover had been necessary to save Brazil from communism. Mr. Dominguez, the teenager learning to play guitar, said the video persuaded him that his teachers had fabricated the horrors of military rule. Ms. Borges, the history teacher vilified on YouTube, said it brought back memories of military curfews, disappeared activists, and police beatings. Quote, I don't think I've had my last beating, she said. So reconstructing history, the military coup of 1964. By the way, read A.J. Lange's Hidden Terrors about that and others. And stylizing images of Mussolini for a video, well, all in the day's work. This concludes For the Record program number 1087, Fascism, 2019 World Tour Part 2. This is being recorded on September 10th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.